For Wednesday, March 18th, we have Clams Night at Bowery Ballroom. Go there featuring Oatil Burbridge with Yossi Piemonte's Heavenly Jams Band at Sullivan Hall. For Thursday, March 19th, we have the Allman Brothers once again at the Beacon Theater. Space Puppets, Roy Hobbs Agenda, New York Electric Piano, ASIS Ensemble, and Mamarazzi at the Sullivan Hall. And I'm just reminding you to check WUSB.FM for more concert listings. Thank you for listening. WUSB, Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. It's time for Off the Wall. Right, the program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, where I'm preparing to read you the last of the predictions from the year 1900. And I've noticed with a little bit of horror that some of these are repeated. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if they messed it up back in 1900 or whoever put this on the internet, if they were the ones that made a big mistake here. But basically, I know we already talked about the oranges growing in Philadelphia. We talked about strawberries as large as apples. I think we talked about vegetables grown by electricity, did we not? Yeah, winter will be made into summer. And you know what? Maybe we didn't talk about that one. Hang on, I'm scanning the previous predictions. Yeah, I don't think we talked about that one. Okay, so here's a prediction from the Ladies' Home Journal in the year 1900 of what life will be like in the year 2000. Winter will be turned into summer, night into day by the farmer. In cold weather, he will place heat-conducting electric wires under the soil of his garden and thus warm his growing plants. Did we really not read this? It sounds so familiar. Of course, I read all these before anyway. I don't see it. Okay, fine. We'll keep reading. He will also grow large gardens under glass. At night, his vegetables will be bathed in powerful electric light, serving like sunlight to hasten their growth. Yeah, I could swear we read this one before. Okay, oranges, strawberries. How about this? Few drugs will be swallowed or taken into the stomach unless needed for the direct treatment of that organ itself. Drugs needed by the lungs, for instance, will be applied directly to those organs through the skin. and flesh. They will be carried with the electric current applied without pain to the outside skin of the body. Microscopes will lay bare the vital organs through the living flesh of men and animals. Yeah, women, you're out of luck. The living body will, to all medical purposes, be transparent. Not only will it be possible for a physician to actually see a living, throbbing heart inside the chest, but he'll be able to magnify and photograph any part of it. This work will be done with rays of invisible light. You see, when you say a sentence like that, that's where it seems like, you know, science fiction, wizardry, and things like that. But, this one disturbs me. Of all the predictions that I've read over the last several weeks, this one disturbs me the most. There will be no wild animals except in menageries. Rats and mice will have been exterminated. The horse will have become practically extinct. Yeah, because I believe one of the other predictions called for the extermination of the horse for some reason, because of various pests that exist in the stables. So getting rid of the horses, that was the solution to that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, 1900. The automobile will have driven out the horse. Cattle and sheep will have no horns. What? I don't even know how you got there. Okay, fine. No horns on the cattle or sheep. They'll be unable to run faster than the fattened hog of today. Oh, what a lovely world 2000 is going to turn out to be. A century ago, the wild hog could outrun a horse. Well, that's because they got a lot more exercise back then, and the horses didn't get as much exercise. Now things have changed. Horses go to gyms, and hogs eat a lot. Food animals will be bred to expend practically all of their life energy in producing meat, milk, wool, and other byproducts. I don't know what the motivation for living is if you're a food animal. Horns, bones, muscles, and lungs will have been neglected. Sounds kind of like today's human, doesn't it? Well, it's true. We neglect our muscles and lungs, and bones, certainly. And our horns, well, just take a good look at your neighbor. You'll see that the horns have been neglected. Okay, here is our last prediction. This really is the last one. There are no more after this. And if anyone knows of any other sources of predictions from the past, perhaps maybe there was a newspaper article in 1700 that predicted what life would be like in 1750. Wouldn't that be something to read today? Okay, well, you go out and you find that newspaper and email it to otw@2600.com. Don't expect me to do all the work. To England in 2 days. Fast electric ships crossing the ocean at more than a mile a minute will go from New York to Liverpool in 2 days. Wow. The bodies of these ships will be built above the waves. They will be supported upon runners, somewhat like those of the sleigh. These runners will be very buoyant. I should hope so. I really hope they stay above the waves. Upon their undersides will be apertures expelling jets of air. In this way, a film of air will be kept between them and the water's surface. Yeah, they have boats like that. They're not going across the ocean, I don't think. This film, together with the small surface of the runners, will reduce friction against the waves to the smallest possible degree. Propellers, turned by electricity, will screw themselves through both the water beneath and the air above. Ships with cabins artificially cooled will be entirely fireproof. In storm, you could say it that way back then. In storm, they will dive below the water and there await fair weather. Oh, I want to read that sentence again. It's just so nice. In storm, they will dive below the water and there await fair weather. It sounds like something Shakespeare wrote, you know? Back in 1900, there was just so much more, I don't know, rhythm to the language. Oh well, it's no going back there, I suppose. Well, imagine being propelled back to 1900, knowing all the things that were to follow, all the world wars and all the technology and the internet and Twitter. And 1900 wouldn't be so bad, would it? But here we are, we're in 2009. My God, are we really in 2009? And today's St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, that doesn't really mean anything to me, but I guess it's kind of cool. If you like watching drunkard people running around the streets. But otherwise, I guess it's okay. It's a good day for parades. Can you march in New York yet if you're gay, or is that still forbidden? I know you can do it in Dublin, and you'd think that if you could do it in Dublin, being as how they're a lot more Irish, you'd be able to be accepted in other places, but especially New York. All right, anyway, enough about that. I'd like to take phone calls later on because we took a number of phone calls last week, and we weren't able to get to all of them. That's how many there were. So we'll try it again this week, 631-632-9872. Area code 631, exchange 632, extension 9872. And that extension, by the way, spells out WUSB. It's one of those weird coincidences that happens every now and then. Today is a bit of history, a bit of sad history. Why? Why a bit of sad history? Because today, another newspaper went out of business. Well, it didn't really go out of business, but it might as well have. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Yeah, it's a weird name, I know, but still. Their giant globe, it's been a fixture on the city's skyline for much of the newspaper's 146-year history. Well, they printed their last edition today, and they're going to be switching to an online-only publication. God help us. Online only. Not much of a newspaper, really, if there's no newspaper. And yet, you know, it might seem old-fashioned. I think the newspaper business has sort of done themselves in on a number of fronts, but probably, for me, the biggest front, the reason why I don't buy the New York Times anymore, is because it's so damn big. They have something like, what, six sections now on a daily basis? Remember the Sunday Times used to be the Times where you get 20 sections. You hear about the real estate, and then the Week in Review, and Arts and Leisure, and Classified. Everything has its own section. The magazine section, the book review. You know, it makes Sunday kind of cool because you have paper for the entire week. If you get sick or something, yeah, no problem. Doesn't matter. They don't have comics. You can pretty much read and never stop. It's a Sunday tradition. But when they started doing it on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, all these sections they keep introducing. I think they had two different business sections, and they had all kinds of variations of the arts. It just got a little too much. I remember back when the New York Times was two sections every day. Just two. That was it. Now, I think newspapers could survive just fine on one section. And as evidence in this argument of mine, I call to the witness stand the International Herald Tribune. If you ever travel overseas, or even if you go various other places, you can find it here in the United States. The International Herald Tribune used to be a co-production of the New York Times and the Washington Post. However, the Washington Post is no longer part of it. It's all the New York Times now. But it's simply one section, a one-section newspaper, and it's loaded to the gills with news. So you have all kinds of things to read about. Yeah, there aren't as many ads, that's true. So I guess maybe if you wanted to sell ads as well, you'd have to maybe have, okay, two small sections. But that's something you can manage. That's something that, you know, is not going to give you a hernia carrying around the city. Something you can read on the subway. So that's my suggestion to the newspaper industry that's falling apart. You know, make it a little bit smaller. Not so much fluff. And then maybe people will, you know, print the fluff online. How about that? Stick that on the internet and give the hard news to the people in the streets. Anyway, the announcement was delivered Monday morning by publisher Roger Oglesby. You know, they didn't give him much time, did they? That was yesterday. To a shattered newsroom that, in classic Post-Intelligencer style, wiped back tears, broke out the whiskey, and then went back to work. We knew it was coming, Oglesby said, as he handed out copies of the statement from the Hearst Corporation. Yes, that's right. The Hearst. They're in everything. They've published the paper since 1921. They've lost $14 million last year alone. Hearst fought for years to keep this place going, but time and these rotten economic conditions finally caught up with us. The nearly 118,000 weekday subscribers are being switched automatically to the city's only remaining daily paper, the Seattle Times, which for 26 years has published under a joint operating agreement with the Post-Intelligencer. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong because I've never said that word before. The Times, with about 199,000 subscribers, is under so much financial duress it can hardly declare victory in one of the nation's most intense newspaper rivalries. It was a competition in one of the last cities to have two dailies where the papers jousted to break news on local government, the changing Northwest environment, and international businesses like Microsoft and Amazon. Well, it's sad. And, you know, New York City has, we have, how many daily newspapers do we have? Four? If you want to count the Observer as a newspaper, I guess you can. You have the Post, you have the Daily News, you have the New York Times. And you can still find copies of Newsday and various other papers around. Not sure how long they're going to last. And if you go to England, there's papers all over the place. You've got the Daily Sun, the Daily Mirror, the Times, the Guardian. Of course, they're all over the country, but still, a lot of papers. And they all have their own different style and look and editorial stance. So it's kind of neat. It's neat to have newspapers. I just don't think the internet is a replacement for them. It's a sad thing. Okay, from the world of newspapers to the world of show business. Oh boy, where do I start? Well, okay, the thing is, I've been complaining quite a bit, actually. I've been complaining about the show 24 for many, many years now. I have, haven't I? Since it came on the air, I've been complaining about this show being unrealistic and promoting all kinds of really bad things, like torture and basically taking the law into your own hands whenever it suits you, if you believe that you can win or believe you're right. But, you know, what happened last night? I'm sorry. And for those of you who haven't seen it or who care about this show, you might not want to tune in because I'm going to reveal a lot. But it is just, it's gone beyond the realm of any sane possibility whatsoever. Even if you accept that their hero protagonist is a superhero and is always right, there are things that just no longer make any sense at all. I've tried to keep up with it and to, even if you suspend your disbelief and accept the premise that everything is happening in real time. It's not happening in real time. Unless these people have mastered light travel, there is no way that these things can be happening so quickly. You say you have to meet somebody on the other side of town. 2 minutes later, you're in their house. How does that even happen? It happens on regular television programs where there are bits of time that pass between scenes, but in a program where the whole premise is that it happens in real time, no, it just doesn't fly. That's been a problem from the outset. All right, so here, just to set you up for the nonsense of last night. Now, Jack Bauer, he's the hero of the program, and I hesitate to use that word hero because he's such an awful person. He's always torturing people and doing all kinds of bad things. Yes, for the greater good, but come on. I think it's all fantasy in his head because he's always right. He's always right about everything. And those stupid laws that get in the way, and that stupid constitution, that just has to be cast aside because it's inconvenient and stupid and naive. Bunch of bleeding heart liberals want to protect everybody. Set a good example. Can't have that in today's world. We live in different times. Yeah. Anyway, so Jack Bauer had to interrogate this guy who knew when the next terror attack was going to take place. Now, the only problem was this guy was in a coma in a hospital. So the FBI had to agree to get that guy out of the coma and think that he was about to get tortured again by Jack. Jack had tortured him before, and they told Jack, don't do that again. And he agreed, I won't do that again. But Jack wasn't really going to be allowed to torture him this time because torture is bad. That's the naive liberal stance that we face these days. Torture is bad. And as a result of people saying that, all kinds of really bad things happen. If only torture were allowed, those things could be stopped because this guy was on the verge of talking, on the verge of saying where the next terror attack was going to be when the FBI ordered him to stop. Actually, the President of the United States ordered him to stop. And as a result, she wound up getting taken hostage by terrorists. Yeah, the evil Africans who came over here. That's a whole other story. This fictitious African country was about to be invaded by the United States because they were slaughtering their people. And instead of staying in their country and fighting the Civil War and taking over their country, they came over to the United States and took over the White House. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? But anyway, let's get back to the hospital room. So they let Jack into the hospital room. The FBI guys are watching on some sort of closed circuit camera what's going on inside the hospital room. Now Jack starts to frighten the guy into talking. but he's being very careful not to actually touch him since Jack is a man of his word. He doesn't go back on his word. He says he's not going to touch somebody. He's not going to do that. But then, something happens to the audio signal in the room that the FBI is watching from. And then the video signal freezes. So it looks like Jack is just talking to this guy at his hospital bed without moving for a very long time. But what really is happening, some guy in a gas mask is lowering himself from the ceiling after spraying the room with some kind of nerve agent that makes both Jack and the guy that Jack was questioning freeze but not lose consciousness so they can see everything that's going on. So this guy with the gas mask comes, kills the person Jack was questioning, and then makes it look like Jack did it before he escapes. The gas wears off, the video signal is restored, the FBI guy sees the suspect was murdered, and Jack somehow hightails it out of there through the same air vent that the killer went through, because he knows he's about to get blamed for everything. And yeah, have you ever in your life hightailed it out through an air vent in the ceiling? Jack does this at least twice an hour in this show. Okay. All of that was just to bring you up to speed on this week's episode. Okay, I'm sorry, but you had to know this in order to understand what was going on. Okay, this week, which really means a couple of minutes later, literally, Jack has already commandeered a car, and he's somehow able to tap into a surveillance system using a Mac laptop. I don't know where he got the Mac laptop. He had it. I didn't see him carrying it. I guess he had a bag or something. Yeah, always carry a bag when you're Jack Bauer. So he had a Mac laptop in that bag, and somehow he taps into a surveillance system, and he can see the guy's face that has come into the hospital to kill this guy. I don't know how he isolated him, but he did. He found him. So then, he calls up his new female friend over at the FBI. This is the agent that at first doesn't believe him, but then does believe him, then doesn't believe him again, and now seems to believe him. But because of all that, she's in the process of getting suspended because she keeps blindly following Jack and not listening to her boss. And they don't like that when you don't listen to the bosses. So she's getting suspended. Now, he calls her on the phone. She's obviously having a bad day already. Well, the whole thing is one day. She's having a bad hour. He gets her to run the guy's face. You can do that. She has a Mac laptop, too. She runs the guy's face, and she identifies him as somebody who works for one of those private military outsourcing companies, you know, the ones that are always going around torturing and murdering and basically working outside the law. Well, they exist in this show, too, trying to take over the entire world. Now, turns out there's one guy out there who's been investigating these companies and trying to shut them down. Do you know who that is? The very same senator that's been trying to get Jack thrown into prison for all the evil things he's done. Yeah. What are the odds? Now, Jack gets his friend over to the FBI to email him the exact location of the senator, because you can track senators. Special software on a Mac you can get for that. Yeah, there's an app for that. So, she uses her Mac laptop to send him the details that say that the senator is on his way to his house in a car. I don't know why she couldn't call him and say that, but basically, she sent it in an encrypted email to Jack on his Mac laptop. So, just then, the FBI agent's boss, the one she hasn't been listening to, the one who's upset at her and has suspended her, comes into her office, and he's able to tell immediately, somehow, that she's been talking to Jack. He can tell this. Now, Jack is a wanted fugitive, a very wanted fugitive at this time, and he can tell by her eyes that she has had contact with him. Now, he gets another agent to track the phone calls she's just made and also find the encrypted email she just sent out. Now, the FBI agent gets captured as she's trying to leave the building, but she won't say what she told Jack or tell people where he is. She won't give him up. Now, meanwhile, in another part of the building, our old friend Chloe from previous seasons, the kind of hyper woman who's very good at what she does, she's being held in the brig, or holding cell, whatever you want to call it, because she was being too helpful to Jack, too, and not following orders. Now, fortunately, her husband, that British accent, bald-headed, bearded guy that was in previous shows, he's in the building, too. And he's demanding her release. Now, he just so happens to be the only person anywhere who can decrypt the secret message that FBI agent just sent to Jack. Now, the FBI guy, the boss of the agent that got suspended, is promising to release Chloe if the bald-headed British guy cracks the encryption, which nobody else in the entire building has any idea how to do. I think that's even an exact quote. Nobody here understands that. So, the bald British guy does this in about 5 seconds on someone else's Mac laptop without any concern over security, keystroke monitoring, any of that. No problem. Here you go. And now they know. Jack is heading to the senator's house. But Jack is already at the senator's house, and the amount of time I spent telling you this, he's managed to get over there. And not only that, he's already set up on the senator's computer. So that when he walks in the door, there he is. All comfy. Now, he demands the senator tell him everything he knows about this company, and over the next few minutes, manages to get the senator to start believing what Jack is telling him. So, the two start to work together. It's beautiful. The guy who, at the beginning of this season, wanted to throw Jack in prison and have all kinds of Senate hearings against what he was doing, now he's working with him because he realizes, hey, he was right. Jack is right. That should be the name of the show. Jack is right. He's always right. So, in a matter of about, 32 seconds, the two of them are working together, and they find the connection that will bring the entire conspiracy down. The senator has a little talk with Jack and tries to get him to work within the system, because that's a better way of doing things. Jack says, you know, you make it all sound so easy, but it's really not that easy. And then, there's a knock at the door. It's the D.C. Metro Police. That's right, they're here. We knew they were on the way. We knew they were on the way. Jack did not know they were on the way. The senator did not know they were on the way, but there they are, at the door. Now, the senator convinces Jack that he can help bring these people down, but they have to work through the system. So Jack decides to let him answer the door and let the police in. But it wasn't the police after all. It was the guy that killed the suspect in the hospital, the guy with the gas mask, and he guns the senator down. And Jack escapes again, but is now framed for the senator's murder as well when the real cops get there. The terrorist guy found out where Jack was because there are moles all throughout the FBI and the local police department, and when the bald-headed British guy gave that information out, decrypted the email. That's when they found out, too. So everyone is basically screwed whenever they don't do exactly what Jack says. I don't have a problem with any of this. You know what? This is all fine. This is how the show works. Here's what I have a problem with. This is what I have a problem with. Why, in God's name, does the terrorist knocking on the senator's door identify himself as the police? All it takes is somebody looking out the window to realize the police aren't there yet. The two of them don't know the police are on the way, so there's no reason to fool them. The only reason to do that is to fool us, because we know the police are on the way. It would make so much more sense for the guy to break into the house and just shoot them both, or shoot whichever one he wants to shoot. It makes no sense. And that's when I gave up. That's when I said, this is too much. All right, but next week I'll let you know how I feel about that episode. Okay, it's 6:30. I guess we can open up phone lines to people out there. If there are people out there willing to call in, 631-632-9872. I'd like to hear your thoughts on various things going on. Oh, shootings. Oh, my God, more shootings. You know, I can't even keep track of them. There are so many going on. I mean, we're talking murder, suicides, things like that. But the two big ones, there was one last week. This happened, I think, the day after the show last week. In Alabama, some guy went and killed a whole bunch of people in two towns because he wanted to be a cop and apparently wasn't good enough to be a cop, but he could shoot pretty good. So he just went from town to town shooting all these people. I think he killed, 10 people? That was a front page story for a little while. And then, that same day, in Germany, this kid goes ballistic and kills something like 15 to 18 people in a school in Germany. They're catching up. Things like that are starting to happen overseas as well. The really weird thing about all of this, and this comes a couple of days after the church shooting. We have a church shooting, we have a town shooting, we have a school shooting. The thing that was so crazy, I was looking at this on the CNN webpage, And you know when there's a story that's really major, really big story, they double the column. They make it a two-column story. So you had the story in the domestic version, the U.S. version of CNN.com, that was all about the shock and horror of what happened in Alabama. Then you went to the international edition. It was the same story, except it was about the shock and horror about what happened in Germany. It was unbelievable. I hadn't seen parallel stories quite like that before. And it was kind of weird, too, because they weren't really mentioning the other story on each other's websites. So that was kind of bizarre and weird. Oh, and today, was it today? Yeah, I believe so. 70s radical Sarah Jane Olson was released from prison. She was once a member of the self-styled Revolutionary Symbionese Liberation Army, perhaps best known for kidnapping Patricia Hearst. Yes, that's right, another Hearst. She was released from a California prison after serving 7 years. She was released to her husband just after midnight and is expected to serve her year-long parole term in Minnesota over the objections of police unions and Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty. Her sentence stems from her involvement in the 1975 attempted bombings of two police cars and the slaying of Myrna Opsahl during a bank robbery that same year. Back then, Olson went by her birth name, Kathleen Ann Solia. After her 1976 indictment and the attempted bombings, she changed her name and started a new life in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she wasn't apprehended until 1999. Kind of weird how she was able to get away with so much for so long and get out fairly early. I mean, convicted of murder, and she only served 1 year for that. But the thing that struck me about this story, I was reading the story, and I was wondering, you know, there's something missing from here. Wasn't this the woman that tried to assassinate Gerald Ford, too? And I was thinking, wow, you know, this person really is an American story of inspiration, basically doing all this crime and terrorism and escaping justice and living a double life. Tries to assassinate the president, and that's not even mentioned in the story. Then I realized, no, you know what? That's not Sarah Jane Olson. That's Sarah Jane Moore. There are two Sarah Janes. Is it any wonder why people get confused and why criminals aren't captured? It's all these names. We need something better than names. Something implanted in us, but we'll talk about that later. Sarah Jane Moore attempted to assassinate U.S. President Gerald Ford on September 22, 1975, outside the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco, and that was just 17 days after Lynette Squeaky Fromm had also tried to kill that very same president. Now, she's involved in this whole Patty Hearst thing as well. Moore's friend said she had a deep fascination and obsession with Patty Hearst. After Hearst was kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army, her father, Randolph Hearst, created the organization People in Need, PIN, to feed the poor in order to answer Symbionese Liberation Army claims that the elder Hearst was committing crimes against the people. Moore was a bookkeeper for PIN and FBI informant when she attempted to assassinate Ford. She had been evaluated by the Secret Service earlier in 1975, but that organization had decided that she presented no danger to the president. Moore was about 40 feet away from President Ford when she fired a single shot at him with a different pistol than the one that she had confiscated a little bit earlier on an illegal handgun charge. That bullet missed the president because the bystander, Oliver Sipple, grabbed Moore's arm and then pulled it to the ground, using his hand to keep the pistol from firing a second time. Moore pleaded guilty to attempted assassination and was sentenced to life in prison. At her sentencing hearing, Moore stated, "Am I sorry I tried? Yes and no. Yes, because it accomplished little except to throw away the rest of my life. And no, I'm not sorry I tried, because at the time it seemed like a correct expression of my anger." So, yeah, interesting. Interesting bit of American history there. It's not always as it's presented on the news programs. Okay, so we take phone calls, 631-632-9872. I'm going to go into delay now. We had a couple of calls coming in before, and they timed out. I'm sorry about that. That happens sometimes. But if you call now, you'll be able to get through. And if we get a bunch of calls, well, we'll go to those right away. Here's somebody to tell you what station you're listening to, and then I'll be back right after this voice.
Hi, this is David Sanchez, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
And here I am, as promised. Again, the phone number is 631-632-9872. And look at that, we have no calls on the line. Well, you know what, I can keep reading all kinds of interesting stories about the things going on, television shows or American history, things like that. Let me remind you, this is a live program if you're listening to us on the Internet. That's right. Between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Tuesday evening, this program is live. You can call area code 631-632-9872. Tell us what's on your mind. Give us your thoughts, feelings, opinions, things like that. Because that's what we're here for. Okay, I see one call on the line. That's good. I want to see two calls. I don't think that's too much to ask for. I think there are more than two people listening, in fact. So I'm not even asking for the sky. I'm asking for two people to call, 631-632-9872. And then we can have some nice things to talk about. What do you think about this whole AIG thing? Oh, my God. There are angry mobs all over the country with pitchforks and fire and things like that. These guys who took bonuses, 73 employees got bonuses of more than $1 million. And a bunch of them left right after they got the bonus. Well, you know, who would stick around? What's the point of sticking around after you get a $1 million bonus? You know, give me a $1 million bonus and I'll be out of here too. You got to do something with the money, right? Maybe these guys, oh look, we lost the call. Now we have no calls. Now we need two people to call in. See, if one person had called in, we'd be talking to somebody else now. You wouldn't be hearing my voice, you'd be hearing somebody else. One person, you had the power and you chose not to use it. Look what happened. All right, now two people, 631-632-9872. I don't like issuing demands. No, I do, actually. But I wish more people would respond. You know, we have five lines. All right, there's one. There's one. See, now it's only up to one more person. The person who messed up last time, this is your chance to vindicate yourself. 631-632-9872. So, yeah, the AIG thing, it's a mess. And everybody's getting really, really angry about this. They're giving out bonuses after being bailed out by the government. And apparently, this is just the way they do things. And they don't know any other way to do things. They don't know any other way. Supposedly, it's Connecticut law that they have to give out bonuses. Crazy. And now there's this talk of making new laws. I don't know how this is even going to work. They're going to make new laws to somehow tax these bonuses 100%. But you can't tax things retroactively, can you? I guess when you're the government, you can do anything. But that's part of the reaction against this. And there have been so many angry voices speaking out. Yeah, and you know what? That call's gone again. Yeah, we can do this all night, folks. We can play ping pong with the phone lines. There's only one listener out there. That's pretty sad. I know people on the Internet, it takes a couple of minutes for the signal to get to you. Actually, let's see how long it actually takes for the signal to get to you. We're going to do something we haven't done in a while. Going to go to the Internet here. Yes, the Internet is right here in the studio. We're going to connect to the WUSB.fm webpage, which if you haven't visited, it's well worth a trip. And then what we're going to do,
see how long it actually
we're
takes.
Going to click on the we're going to,
do something we haven't
high quality Internet feed. To, you can see where we are.
Yes, the Internet is right.
You're going to hear my voice, presumably, because nobody else is talking. And it's loading. Oh, you know what? It was loading in the wrong place. I'm sorry, folks. I did it again. What you heard, you might even still be hearing it. You heard in the future. I played it live. I'm on delay. So let's see how far back. Boy, that must have been confusing. I'm sorry. High-quality Internet feed.
To,
you can see where
Internet.
We are. See, now I'm listening to it.
You can hear my voice.
I'm listening to myself three times.
Talking.
And it's loading. I should apologize at some point now. Oh, you know what? It was loading in the wrong place. I'm sorry, folks. I did it again. What you heard.
You might even still be
wow. So it's not that far. It's about a minute away, I think. Okay. We have one call. No, we have no calls. Okay. You know, I'm going to keep reading stories. I'm going to look over to the phone lines occasionally. And boy, you know, we're going to be asking for money soon, folks, next month. And if this is the reaction that we get from people when we're not asking for money, I don't know what this place is. What the future of this place is going to be. Can't say I'm very optimistic. This show, let me just tell you, this show is what gives me the the lift to get through the week, because there's all kinds of bad news out there. And hearing from people, knowing they're out there, knowing that they're thinking, knowing that I'm not just speaking into an empty microphone, that's the lift I need to get through this week. Without that, I don't know. Thank you to the one person who keeps calling. But you know what? I think it's just you and me. I don't think anyone else cares. Amazing. When you say that all it takes is somebody calling 631-632-9872 and nobody does it. Nobody. I think now people are intentionally not doing it to see how crazy it'll drive me. People are calling each other saying, make sure you don't call the station. See if Emmanuel will totally lose it tonight on the air. But I know out there, there is at least one person who cares. Cares enough. There. Two calls. Finally, what I had to go through. That was childbirth. It really was. Three calls. Four calls. Five calls. I don't believe this. It's a big practical joke to you guys, isn't it? Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, Emmanuel.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Shirley.
Oh, did you call last week? Or the week before?
I called a few weeks ago, sir.
Okay. What's on your mind?
I was wondering, how come there's no 2600 meeting on Long Island?
Well, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. You're referring to the Hacker Magazine that I'm involved with, and we have monthly meetings all around the world on the first Friday of the month where people just gather and trade information and stories and have fun and meet each other in person. We have one first Friday of every month at the Citigroup Center in New York City. In fact, that's the first one, started in 1987. But we don't have one on Long Island. Reason being, you got to pick a place. You got to pick a central location, and Long Island is just filled with all kinds of little villages and towns and gathering points and malls and things like that. If we picked one place, let's say we said Smith Haven Mall, then somebody at the Sunrise Mall would get upset and say, well, why can't it be at that mall? Long Island is not the best place for mass transit, so it's not very easy to get around. That's why cities tend to be better. What I suggest for people out there that are interested in being part of the meetings, take that trip once a month and meet new people, not just the people that you already know. And that's kind of the long answer.
Gotcha.
All right.
Right. Well, then I guess I'll have to show up to the one in the city.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you there. I mean, it's a short hop on a train. Well, actually a little longer for you and Shirley, but it's good to get into the city every now and then. And you meet people that you stay in touch with for a very long time.
Yeah, I work in the city, though. I'm sick of it by the time Friday comes, so.
Well, stick in the city a little longer, and it'll be a nice way to relax and unwind after the the work experience you have.
Exactly. All right, have a good evening.
Thanks for calling. And you're not going to believe this, but we had four more calls, and they all disappeared. Now, I know it's not your fault. I know. What happens is the phone company is greedy, and they disconnect phone calls that don't answer. They didn't used to do that. You used to be able to ring a phone all weekend if you wanted to. But just please call back. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up, please. All right. That's the other part of it. If you call us, you got to say something. You can't just call and not say anything. Maybe I should have mentioned that from the beginning. 631-632-9872. We have email from people. We always have email. And our email address, otw@2600.com. Dear Emmanuel, I heard you playing Clandestino as your closing music. Was reminded of an email of mine you answered over a year ago about Manu Chao. Just wanted to thank you for introducing me to his music. I've enjoyed picking up a CD of his every now and then. I love the new theme and the voice of Long Island. I look forward to seeing you and the rest of the 2600 crew at Hope next year. Thanks, Fernando G., for writing in with those pleasant remarks. And yes, the next Hope will be taking place, I believe, in July of 2010. So we look forward to seeing you there. And a bunch of people actually wrote in, wanting to know who the artist was, what the title of the song was last week. And yeah, it was Manu Chao. It's spelled Manuchao. And I know trolls from Denmark wanted to know this as well. So now you have your answer. You know, there's an amazing application on the iPhone. This is actually the first time I've sung its praises, but wow, this is unbelievable. If you have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you can get this kind of an application where basically you hold it up to a speaker and it'll identify the song just like that. If it's music, if it's lyrics, whatever, it gets it. I was in a kind of noisy place last week, and I tried this out, and it actually worked. Now, of course, then there's there's a link to buy the album if you want, which is, I guess, kind of cool. You hear a song you like, why not buy the album immediately, without thinking twice? Okay. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Dear Off the Wall, just dropping you a line, let you know that there are, in fact, Australian listeners out there, Aussie listeners. The radio clip you played on last week's show, I never heard it played before in my life. We played this radio program, a piece in this radio program that was using the old theme, the old Off the Wall theme. Well, it's not the Off the Wall theme. It's a Philip Glass piece, but it's just kind of unusual to hear it on a different show. The only time I ever heard that song played, according to this listener, is from the Off the Wall theme. So thank you, Ben from Australia, for letting us know that. Okay, as long as we're talking about television, we might as well continue talking about television. Because this is kind of ridiculous. Battlestar Galactica, yeah, another program with all kinds of weird storylines. And, you know, it's made all the more difficult. I'm bad with faces as it is, so I have a hard time telling people in uniform apart. When I watch Generation Kill, you know, they all look the same to me. All these soldiers. Battlestar Galactica, it's even worse because you have the Cylons, and they take on human form, but then there can be an infinite number of them. And because they can't afford to pay a whole lot of actors, I think they only have about 7 models, so they just keep having the same actor or actress playing different parts, and you're supposed to keep track of them. And it gets really, really confusing. But there are people who follow this, like the gospel, and that's great. Apparently, the United Nations follows it. You know what, I'm going to take some phone calls. We'll get back to the story if they're lame. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi.
Speak up, please. Where are you calling from?
This is Ian from Germany, actually.
Ian from Germany. What part of Germany are you in?
Bremen, the city of Bremen.
I'm not saying Berlin. You're saying Bremen?
Bremen, yes.
Oh, Bremen. Bremen. Okay, great. So what's on your mind tonight?
This is about the shooting that happened in Germany at the school.
Yes. It must have the whole country in shock over there, because that doesn't happen all that often, right?
Yeah, well, there's about 40 million real weapons in there in private ownership in Germany, and it's about 5 million people out of 82 million people in Germany that own weapons legally. So we have very strict laws here about weapon ownership. You know, it's not like you're supposed to sleep with a gun under your pillow. And if the father of the guy who actually did the shooting at the school would have obeyed to the law, nothing would have happened. So he was supposed to have his guns and all that stuff, his ammunition, in a safe place. They should have been locked up.
So the law, the way it works down in Germany, you have to, I imagine you can't keep a loaded gun in your house. You have to have everything separated. Is that right?
Right. And it has to be kept, like, in a bank, I don't know the word, a treasure.
In a vault?
Vault, yes.
Yeah, okay, or in a safe or something like that. So I imagine the only person with the combination or key would be the person that's licensed to actually have the weapon.
Only the legal owner of those guns is supposed to have a key to that, and not his son.
Mm-hmm.
He actually kept one of those guns and obviously a lot of ammunition out of those vaults, and that's how that stuff happened.
Right. And is the father facing any kind of charges for this?
Well, I don't know yet. We have to wait.
What's the general reaction of people over there? Are they angry that the laws aren't stricter, or are they just angry at one person not paying attention to the law?
The first thing that happens is the shock.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, this kind of thing didn't used to happen over there, where people just getting freaking out and taking out everybody around them. Do you think there's something behind this anger that seems to be spreading?
Well, there's a lot of reaction out there, but first thing you notice is, there's a lot of people who are saying, okay, how could this stuff happen? Why?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, it's not supposed to happen that way. But
Are people blaming violent video games or all kinds of other cultural
things? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is imminent. It has happened a few times ago. We had some like in America, we had some shootings at schools, but each and every time there's this so-called killer game issue going on. Well, I don't believe in this at all. It's not all about games. It's about movies. It's about books.
Mm-hmm.
About everything that goes on in society. There's violence out there.
Mm-hmm. I believe the reaction to this over there is a lot. I don't know, people seem to be reacting more than they do here. Here it's kind of like forgotten the day after, and we move on to the next story, which oftentimes is another shooting. But over there, this doesn't happen that much, so I imagine it's still the top story every place?
Yes, it is, and it will be for several months.
As it should be, because that's really the only way to address these problems, to find out what causes them and do something to prevent them.
There's a lot of people crying out loud for we have to shorten weapon rights and who's about to who's gonna pay the right to own a weapon later. So over here in Germany, it's not like everyone can own a weapon legally.
Yeah, the process is a lot harder and stricter. I know that. So now,
much more strict.
Right. What's your personal opinion as to what you think the right way to address this is?
Well, I personally don't feel like I do not need a gun, and the persons who might need a gun for sports or hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one might find one might think about some place who, there's studies about that stuff. If you don't keep it at your home, there's not so much bad incidents happening.
That makes so much sense, what you just said. Don't keep it at the home. That's where most of this happens.
If you're kind of drunk, if some bad stuff happens, like your neighbor's hammering at your door, you're not just like going out there and pointing a gun at him.
Mm-hmm. Right, because people do lose their tempers and they do lose control, and if you have a weapon at your disposal, we see it all the time. We see it with cops. We see it constantly.
If it's at your shooting range, in a vault,
mm-hmm.
if it's at your hunting place, in a vault.
Right. You see, to give you an idea of how we react here, our reaction is that if all the people that were at that school had guns, then this wouldn't have happened because they could have shot back. That's the American way of dealing with this.
Yes.
And our churches now have armed guards in them to prevent people from taking out the pastor. You know, rather than look at the cause, why is this happening in the first place, and trying to address that, we're simply living with it like this is an acceptable part of life, and that's the part that I really cannot have in my life.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah. Listen, thanks very much for a great call, and I hope you guys get through this okay, and that you're able to figure out a way to put an end to this.
I hope so.
All right. Take care. And it's one of our listeners in Germany. Yeah, and now all the calls are coming in. Great. You know, this happens every time. People, maybe I should just move the show a half hour and end at 7:30 instead, and then everybody will, does that fit your schedule better? Well, sorry, we're out of time now. Quickly, though, I did mention the, well, let me get out of delay first, and I'll quickly mention what the story was. Yeah, okay, here I am live again. The story basically was that members of Battlestar Galactica, the television program, are going to be meeting with UN representatives to discuss issues such as human rights, children and armed conflict, and terrorism. Yeah, that's right. People from a television show are going to talk to the United Nations about that. You know what? Why not? I don't think anybody else is doing a better job. Okay, we are out of time. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. We would love to hear from you. And next week, maybe we'll get some phone calls, some more phone calls. All right, otw2600.com, Manuel for Off the Wall. Have yourselves a good night.
Kids, it's 7 p.m. right here on WUSB. Stony Brook Finn with you. Happy St. Paddy's Day.